From our family to your family, this is A Legacy of Faith, the podcast. Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, the podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We're enjoying moving through the month of January with you, and we are pleased to be joined this week by a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Brother Dale Sather. Dale, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adam. Glad to be here.
Dale and I go way... How many A's should I put in this way here, Dale? Because it's getting longer all the time.
But Dale and I go all the way back to our days in Freed Hardeman. I don't know about you, but I am not getting older. But yes, back in Freed Hardeman, we were freshmen there together and had similar friends, similar acquaintances, and you know, we knew each other through the Bible department, of course.
Yeah, we're getting older, but it's just a number. How about that?
There you go.
Well, Dale is a very interesting man. Besides having a lot of what seems like about 47 jobs, it seems like every time I hear from him, he's got a different job. He also does a lot of trail running and all mountain climbing and all kinds of fun stuff. But Dale, in your multiple day jobs, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your job and your family and those sorts of things.
All right. Well, I have been a counselor now, a full-time counselor for 10 years. In my full-time position, I work as a school counselor. But you know, along with that, I have a private practice in White House where I do primarily marriage counseling. I do see children, individuals, and that sort of thing. But I really want to focus on the family in my private practice. I often say that I specialize in marriage, parenting, and men's issues. Of course, we're going to be talking about parenting this evening. But, and I guess what also would interest your listeners is I have worked with the church in one capacity or another for just over 20 years. Since I was in my teens, I started, you know, wanting to be a youth minister, and I worked with my particular youth group and then went on to Freed Hardeman and have worked in one capacity or another with the church now going on over just over 20 years. And so I've been a youth minister, and I preach quite a bit by appointment and, at my home congregation where we worship in Cottontown, Tennessee. And so those are the three jobs that I have, counseling at school, my private practice, and, of course, the ministry there at the church. So I guess that's why I'm here tonight, is for those three things.
So he's a man with a lot of credentials, and he's also a husband, has two children, so he comes at this with every angle possible, it seems like.
Yeah, experience teaches us a lot.
You got that right, for sure. And we love Dale Melita, and just glad to have him with you. For our listeners, we record these via video, and then I take the audio later, but I was going to ask you, and then we got on the video, I noticed, I was going to ask you, why you're wearing a weird sport coat, but you're not wearing a weird sport coat tonight. I was very
not
upset
today.
About that.
No, not today. You'll see it at Lads to Leaders. I assume you'll be at Lads to Leaders with us this year.
That's the plan. Yes, sir. Right. We're looking forward to being in Nashville again for that.
Awesome. I finalized some of our plans today for that. But, yeah, I try to get interesting sport coats. It started several years ago, actually, before we were going to Lads to Leaders. And it just kind of stuck, I guess. We're all known for something. That's at least one of the things I'm known for, I suppose.
What we want to talk about on the program this week is parenting, of course, but there's a lot of different angles we could look at it. And Dale has written a book recently, and we'll let him plug that at the end. But the name of the book is Generations to Come, and the subtitle is Becoming All Things to Your Child. And the book covers a lot of areas concerning parenting. But we want us to sort of drill down for a few minutes one of the roles that parents play. But before we get to that one role, you know, Dale, there's a lot of different things that people think parents need to be for their kids, you know, friends, companions, or whatever. I mentioned just two there. You know, what are some other things that people think, you know, kids need from their parents, or the roles that parents play for their children?
Right. Well, that was part of my motivation for the book, is in talking to the parents that I spoke with, you know, at school and eventually in my private practice, once that got started a few years back, I really saw a lot of struggles within parents and what they wanted to be for their child. And some of them focused, you know, heavily on one and then on another, because we all have different parenting styles as that goes. And I just began to notice how parents differ in their approaches, and I thought, you know what, each of these approaches in one way or another has its own merit. And you mentioned, you know, being a friend to your child, which everybody, you know, talks about how that is a terrible thing. And to a degree, I certainly agree with that, that I think, you know, saying that you're your child's friend is not the way to go. But however, there are elements of friendship that I think most all parents would want to employ as they relate to their children. So that's one. And in my book, I also talk about being a model for your parent, and I speak there a lot about, you know, things that sometimes are lost in regards to adults and how they relate to their children, because, you know, your children are always watching you. And so I tell parents, you know, you got to be a model for your child, and we all know that, but I'm not totally sure we understand what that actually entails, and I talk about that in my book. But there is also the guide part, you know, the mentor, which we'll talk about, and then the model, which, you know, what will my child learn from me is the question that that asked. The mentor, what can I teach my child? And then finally the guide, you know, what do I need to make sure my child gains from me, learns from me, and really kind of like a guide on a hiking trail, or any guide that is, you know, charged with the task of taking care of someone. And those are the roles that parents play. And there are others that are under these that can be broken down. You know, we're coaches. One of my, you know, favorite nonprofits in the country, fathers.com, the National Institute for Fatherhood, I believe, Kerry Casey, he has his own little breakdown about what a father should be. I've spoken to him on a few occasions, and one of the things he says is, you know, dads in particular, since it's, of course, a father nonprofit, talks about parents being a coach, mm-hmm. you know, and that certainly is an element to what we are to do for our children. I think sometimes parents forget about these varying roles and end up, you know, just wanting to be one of them, or end up not really utilizing any of them very effectively, and thereby they, you know, lessen their effectiveness as a parent.
That's a good list. Now, as you mentioned, you go into a lot of these in at least some detail in the book that we're discussing on the program, and I think the thing you said there at the end is one of the keys, and that is that we sometimes talk about the idea of a parent being a friend to their children is not a good thing. Well, it's a good thing to a point, or at least in balance. It's probably a better way of saying that.
You know, right,
Combined with the other things, yeah. And the one we want to spend some time talking about on the program this time on a legacy of faith is the idea of being a mentor. To your children. And that's a concept that I think that a lot of us sort of, as you said, I think we know it, but maybe we don't know how to define what that really means, because it seems like a lot of these other areas sort of fit under the umbrella of being a mentor for your child. So when you write about this idea in the book of being a mentor for your child, what exactly are you speaking of specifically using that term?
You know, I think of, you know, Jesus and how he related to the disciples. You know, when Peter denied him, you know, Jesus told him, hey, you know, you're going to deny me very, very soon. And Peter says, no, Lord, no, I'll never deny you. Jesus didn't argue with him. And Jesus just let his prophecy pan out. And that taught Peter a tremendous lesson. And that's really, in a nutshell, what a mentor does. You know, a parent will want to save the child. A parent will want to, you know, argue with the child sometimes and tell them, no, you need to listen to what I'm trying to tell you. But a mentor, on the other hand, will let the child experience things. Sometimes, you know, I think parents try to shield their children too much, and this is often referred to as helicopter parenting, where the parent, you know, shields and shields the child and shields the child, and they end up, the child never really learns through their own experiences and making of mistakes, you know. Jesus, however, he worked to teach people who hated him. He worked to teach people such as Judas, who would eventually betray him. And that would be tough for a person to do. But, you know, Jesus' intent on this earth was to teach others. That was one of the things, of course, that he was supposed to do. And he did that really effectively. And as you think about, you know, how he interacted with the disciples, you know, when Peter walked on the water, Jesus didn't say, no, Peter, I'm coming. I'll be there in a second. But rather, he allowed Peter to come out onto the water, you know, because that's the choice that he made. And, hey, man, if Peter makes it, great. If Peter falls, which he could, then I'll save him, and we'll teach a lesson that way. So Jesus was a mentor, and the thrust of this is, you know, a parent working to teach their child things. You know, what can I teach my child, basically?
You sort of started to answer this question, and I want to sort of, because people say, well, then you're saying you need to teach your children. But how specifically does a mentor teach children, other than just sort of sit them down at the desk or go right to their bedroom at night and read them a book question. Or whatever?
Right. They put experiences in their way. They enroll them in sports. They enroll them in, you know, church activities. They set them on a path to learn how to play an instrument. They, you know, let them engage in social situations. They, when the child comes home having a bad day at school, the parent doesn't rush to try to make it all better, but rather the parent allows this child to learn through these various experiences the lessons that are there and that are available to be taught. Because, you know, you can't sit down with a child and teach them all the lessons on a piece of paper. Or, you know, you have to allow experiences in life itself to teach your child things. And this is what a mentor would do. You know, I often also think of, you know, Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. I'm showing my nerd side here. But okay. when Gandalf was trying to lead Frodo, he try to shelter him from anything, but rather they walked side by side with one another. And that's what you have to do as a mentor to your child, is walk side by side with them, not walk in front of them, pushing things out of the way, but being right there with them and helping them learn things along the way. And like I said, not to shelter them too much to the point that they miss out on important life lessons.
So you're hinting at something there that is really unpopular in our world today, and that is, I think what you're saying, at least in part, not everything needs to be this, but you're saying a mentor at times allows their child to fail, and that's really unpopular in our world.
I don't care about that. I don't care about what's popular. Definitely, you know, we don't want our children to fail. Everybody, you know, gets a trophy, and that's not good to a certain extent. I mean, I'm all for trophies, but if you are constantly, you know, shielding your child from failure, they won't learn. One of my favorite, you know, this is a podcast, of course, and it's a good one. One of my other favorite podcasts, however, is Freakonomics, and I don't know if you're familiar with that book, Stephen Levitt, Stephen Dubner, and they have a show. It's called, I don't know the exact title, but the thrust of the podcast, and they talk about this in their books, I'm sure, to a degree, is why winners quit. And they just go on and on and on about how people who are true winners in life, they know how to lose. They know, you know, when to quit. They know when to stop something, because if you're not gonna win, I mean, certainly you need to try and try again, but at some point it's time to stop. Or, you know, at some point you need to allow your child, in this case, to experience failure, to experience heartache, because when they know what it is, they'll be able to handle it later in life, and because you won't always be there to shelter them, ideally anyway, you won't always be there to shelter them from the bad things of this earth. And that's one of the good teaching tools, is allowing your child to fail. So that they can learn what that's like and learn that they don't like it, you know? And so it's a good motivator.
Excuse me. And part of being a mentor is you're right there with them when they do fail.
Yeah,
exactly. And as you pointed earlier, you're walking side by side with them. Even if you don't make the same failure, you see them do that and help you. You hold their hand, working the way out of it.
Exactly. You are showing them how to get through those difficult times. Now, a parent may often not, you know, want to allow their child to experience such negative things. And there are things in this world that you need to keep your child away from. But failure just isn't one of them.
Right. And that's a great point. It's something that, as we said, it's not all that popular, but I'm with you. I don't really care that much about what's popular. Yeah. What's doing what's best for God's glory and what's best for my kids. That's the
exactly.
main thing. As you write in the book about mentoring, parents mentoring their children, one of the things you speak about in I believe it's chapter 4, as I'm looking here, is an interaction cycle of the mentors, especially parents, with their children. And I don't want to have you give away everything that's in your book, but this was one of the parts of the book that I found, even though it was very short, just about a page or page and a half, that I found very interesting. Does this sort of describe what you mean by these interaction cycles between the mentor, parent, and the child?
Right. Well, every interaction that we have has a cycle, if you think about it. When we got online this evening and started talking, we exchanged pleasantries and then talked about a direction of what we were going to discuss. And then now we are here. Eventually we'll stop and exchange pleasantries again and then be on our merry way. And that's an interaction cycle. Marriages do the same thing. And a lot of times in a marriage, that's what's going on, is there are nothing but, negative interaction cycles. And, parents can often get frustrated with their children because of their behavior for, just more than obvious reasons. And if you blow up every time they do something wrong, you're missing a good teachable moment. With an interaction cycle, if a child, tries to engage you in a negative way, oftentimes a parent will want to respond in kind. But if you are going to make it productive, you've got to not allow yourself to, respond in a negative way right along with them. Because if they're responding negatively, there's something going on. They are, frustrated about something. And oftentimes children will use negative interaction cycles to get their way. If I can start an argument with my parent, they'll just tell me to go to bed and I won't have to clean my room the way they told me to. So children will often use negative interaction cycles, to their advantage.
I like how you put that. We don't usually think of, especially conversations, as cycles, but all of them are. And the other thing I want to spend a couple of moments on, think about this concept of the mentor and parent and children, and sometimes I think when we consider the picture of a mentor is they don't have to say anything. The idea is you just live your life. Someone sees you live your life and they learn how to live. But you spend a whole chapter of the book talking about even as a mentor, you have to communicate. There has to be a communication involved. It's not just watch me live, or it's not even just walking beside them. It's saying certain things. And I just want to ask you, in sort of a personal way, or maybe from your counseling experience, what do you think parents who are trying to be mentors struggle with the most as far as communication? Is it listening? Is it talking too quickly? What part of that cycle, especially communication, do you think most parents struggle with, at least generally speaking?
Yeah, they're just not doing it effectively. One of the good things, probably the biggest pro about the mentor mentality, is that it really does open the lines up for communication. You can communicate to your child, tell them what you want them to do, and maybe they'll do it, maybe they won't. But a mentor, on the other hand, wants genuine feedback from their child. And that's something a lot of parents miss out on, is genuine feedback. I talk to my child, they respond, and we have a conversation going. Earlier in the podcast, I talked about how certain elements of friendship can be good in a parent. Not that you are their friend, but what does your child do to his friends every day? He talks to them. Mm-hmm. He talks openly. He talks candidly with his friends. And what parent wouldn't want that? And I think if you do it right, you won't maybe not reach that same level of discussion, I hope not, of what happens on the bus. But your child is talking to you. And that, of course, is what we want. Now, I think the mistakes that parents make oftentimes is they are very quick to jump in and want to fix something. You know, the child, let's say the child did open up and want to discuss something with the parent. Well, here's what you need to do, son. You know, that's not really not the way to handle it until the child is ready to hear that, especially teenagers. Teenagers want to be given the map. They don't want you to point and do that. You know, they want to be given the map so that they can find the way themselves. So if you're too quick to offer help to your child when they haven't even gotten it all out yet, that can be a detriment. And, of course, listening, you always, always, always want to do that. But I think parents also, though, don't make themselves available to talk. That's what I tell parents a lot of times, you know, in my offices, is if you want your child to speak to you, you've got to be available. If you're always on Facebook, if you're always on the computer, if you're always on television, when are they supposed to come and talk to you? You know, sitting down in a non-threatening way on the back porch with a cup of coffee would certainly open up the pathway for the kids to come and speak to you. And I would also tell parents to adopt a no yelling policy. And when you yell, you really do harm to your child. Now, I'm not saying never yell, because if you didn't raise your voice in some instances, some children would never get it. They don't get the importance of it. They don't grasp the weight of the topic that you're trying to convey to them. Son, make better grades. Okay, what's he do? He brings home Fs. Son, make better grades. He brings home Fs again. He's not getting it. And one of the ways you can help him get it is by raising your voice to impress upon him the weight of the matter regarding his education. I just let him fail. I don't want my child to get an F on his report card in another 9 weeks. That's not teaching him anything now. So you want to raise your voice from time to time on particular things that you want them to learn immediately. But as a general rule, though, I'm not one for yelling at all. So I think that's another, you know, mistake that a lot of parents do make, and their word choice, you know, what words they use. It's called the language of choice. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you have a child who is strong-willed and really wants it their way, you're probably not going to win in a power struggle. But just a small parenting change can make a huge difference to that. If your child doesn't want to go to bed, for instance, well, you tell them, you give them a choice here. Do you want to go, let's say it's a younger child, do you want to go to bed with your stuffed dog or your stuffed rabbit? Guess what? They still have the choice, right? But what they don't have the choice over is going to bed, mm-hmm. which is what you wanted to have happen to begin with. So you're still the parent, you're still in control, but you're allowing the child to experience an appropriate level of control that, based on their personality, you know, makes them feel good and feel valued.
That's a very good discussion, very good thoughts there. And in a lot of ways, you're putting the tennis ball in their court when you let them make those sorts of decisions. But you're still on the court. You're still making sure that you're in charge of things. Right. Dale, I think we've already kept you a little longer than I had anticipated, and that's fine. Appreciate you taking the time with us. Before we let you go, this is obviously a book, and I have read it and enjoyed it greatly. Very practical things, but also some things in there that show that you've studied and show that you've researched. And so take just a moment. I'll let you take a minute here and give the plug. Give us the name again. Can be found. And if you don't mind as well, let people know how they can contact you if they have more questions about the book itself.
Excellent. My book is Generations to Come. It is actually the third book that I've authored. There are two others that are on the Kindle, on Amazon. One of those is 28 Days to a Better Marriage. That's also available in paperback, and that's on Amazon.com. But Generations to Come, Becoming All Things to Your Child, you know, this book talks about being a model, a mentor, and a guide to your children. It's available at 21st Century, which is 21stcc.com. They're the publisher, 21st Century Christian. And it's also available on Amazon, and so you can get it on either of those places. Also, if you have questions about this book, about counseling for churches, about any sort of mental health issues, you know, visit my website, dalesadler.net. There's a contact, some contact information there. I write periodically. It's my blog as well, so you'll find some interesting articles on marriage, parenting, and men's issues. So dalesadler.net, and you can find out a lot more there.
And if you didn't get all of those information where you can find these things, we'll have links to all those things in the show notes of this particular program, and that's at fawnfamily.com/15, the number 15, fawnfamily.com/15. Dale Sadler, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this week on the podcast.
Yes, sir, Adam. Thank you very much.
We appreciate Dale, appreciate all the work that he does, and for him taking the time to be with us this week. And we look forward to being back with you again next week on A Legacy of Faith. And remember, until then, your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.